The guy just came into our store and started shooting. There was nothing we could do. We just huddled behind the counter, defenseless. Eventually, the police showed up, but by then it was too late. Six people were already dead, including my wife and daughter. If only I had a gun, maybe they'd still be alive.
Americans who own guns prevent over a million violent crimes every year and save lives. Get the facts. Visit armedandsecure.org.
Next weekend, McMahon Roadrunner Gun Shows invites you to buy, sell, trade, and just plain enjoy firearms and the accessories that go with them. Bring the whole family to the Tucson Expo Center, 3750 East Irvington, just east of Palo Verde. Saturday 9 to 5 and Sunday 9 to 4. Parts, accessories, lots and lots of ammo, and good friendly people to assist you in the purchase of fine firearms and selling same. Next weekend, Tucson Expo Center, 3750 East Irvington, just east of Palo Verde.
Hi, this is Charles from the Swap Shop and Liberty Watch. Does the thought of auto repair bring up pleasant memories? If not, consider Perfection Auto Works. Mike Emery and his techs have worked on my cars and trucks for the last 3 years, and his advice has counseled me into three excellent vehicles and away from several others with his 26-point inspection, buyer's check, including Carfax histories, and detailed analysis. I'm endorsing Perfection Auto Works because I've gotten more value than I've paid for. While they specialize in Porsche, Audi, and Mercedes, they've done a great job on my Toyotas, Chrysler, Chevy, and Ford. The work has been what I wanted, as promised, done right, at the price agreed. If that sounds reasonable to you, then make an appointment at Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650. That's 323-8650. Located near Speedway in Craycroft, and in business since 1994, you can reach Perfection Auto Works at 323-8650.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
And one of those guardians is on the line with us, Hans Marrero, what he was commander of the training division of the Marine Corps for hand-to-hand combat. He has a well-established and well-respected reputation for being a premier self-defense and hand-to-hand combat instructor in the United States. For over 4 years, Gunnery Sergeant retired Marrero served jointly as chief instructor of hand-to-hand combat for the U.S. Marine Corps at Parris Island. He is considered one of the leading experts in close-quarter combat in the world. He's also well-known throughout the international law enforcement agencies due to his extensive work in anti-terrorism tactics instruction during his highly decorated career as a U.S. Marine, which includes special operations groups. It is both a joy and a pleasure and indeed, in addition, an honor to have with us retired Gunnery Sergeant Marrero. Sir, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah. Do we say, sir, if you're enlisted? My dad would laugh at that, Master Sergeant Heller, but he left us October of last year. He was one of his great regrets was that he was a tanker and he never got into combat. So, he was also
still serve, and that's the most important thing. That
yep,
they're representing his country, and if there would have been combat, he would have. I'm sure he would have been right in the middle of it.
Oh, boy, would he ever. You know, Dad was incredibly claustrophobic, and I found out that he was never in a tank that had a working hatch latch. The first thing he did whenever he took out a tank at Fort Knox or Fort Campbell was disable the tank the hatch latch so he could never get trapped inside. I found that out fairly close to the end of his life, and I thought it was absolutely comical.
Okay. Smart man.
Yeah, well, I would imagine so. I imagine it'd be darn hard to get the hatch open if the tank were laying on its side and it did have a latch in it. But on to why we have you on, Sergeant Marrero. You have black belts in five different disciplines of the martial arts, and I won't even try to pronounce them all, but what motivated you to go into the United States Marine Corps originally?
Well, when I was 16 years old, I used to train under Chris Dundee in Miami Beach, Fifth Street Gym. And Chris Dundee is the brother of Angelo Dundee, which was Muhammad Ali's trainer and manager. And my mother did not want me to fight professionally. I had a contract at 16, and she just totally against it. So I continued to train with my master, and then from there I knew that my calling was, I'm a warrior, and my calling was to go into the Marine Corps and fight.
So in other words, instead of doing something dangerous like fighting, you went somewhere safe like the Marine Corps, huh?
Yeah.
How did you become particularly interested in the specialty of hand-to-hand combat? Was it through the martial arts, or was there some particular event in your life? I like to lovingly call it what freight damage would cause someone, and I have plenty of my own freight damage. I'm not saying it insultingly, but what in a person's life could cause them to be interested in hand-to-hand combat?
Mostly your upbringing and your martial arts, but truly, it's how my teacher put it was that when you are chosen to be a warrior, it's calling from God. That God sends his angel Michael to retrieve a soul from a special place in heaven. That soul is then given to Gabriel, and Gabriel flies down to earth and releases the soul in the root of the mouth of the child as he's coming out of his mother's womb. There the decision is made whether that child is going to be a sheep, like all the other sheep, or a sheepdog, a protector of the flock. You know, there's only one sheepdog that protects 1,000 sheep or 2,000 sheep. And that is the moment of having that understanding and a passion of being a warrior. So fighting, shooting, knife, sword, that's all part of it, and it attracts the warrior. It was a long answer, but...
I'm speechless.
I was just saying...
Folks, if you would like to talk to a true warrior and know what it's like, find out what it's like to be in combat for your country, or teach others how to be in combat for your country, I didn't even plan to ask you about this, but can you try to explain to people who don't understand, I lovingly call them the grass eaters, can you try to explain why honor is so important to not only the creed of the warrior, but to the country at large, why it's so important, and why... For instance, concepts like never leaving a comrade on the field of battle are so important to the warrior.
I have a class coming tomorrow I have some special forces guys and some military folks and government folks and some police officers going to the school starting tomorrow. It's a week-long course, but that's one of the things I always ask them. I said, what do you think is your greatest fear in battle? And I usually get fear of the unknown, fear of death. So I tell them, no, it's neither one of those. You don't fear death because you know death comes quickly and it's painless. It is better to die in honor than to live as a coward in your own mind for the rest of your life. That is an important concept to have. A warrior has to have his honor intact, because without it, you're just another crazy psychopath killer. And that's what separates you from doing the good thing.
I think, ergo, the difference between a killer and a murderer.
Correct. Absolutely. And here's what honor teaches you, humility. It teaches you to not feel sorry when you're in battle for your enemy, but empathize with him. Sorrow is just saying, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry I had to kill you. I'm sorry I had to take you out. But empathy is the ability to feel what that person may be going through, or what his family, as you take a life, may be going through. That's what separates a warrior honor from anybody else out there in the street. Somebody who's willing to go out there. You think about police officers. No, officers that get paid less than $30,000 a year. And while everybody, when there's gunshots flying everywhere, everybody's running away. They're the only ones that are running towards the gunfire. You know, that it's that spirit that just drives you forward, that you want to do the right thing each and every time, even if it meant death. That's what honor is. And you have to have it. You know, my teacher told me that in order for you to be a leader, you have to be a warrior. You have to be a warrior. Because if you're not a warrior and you're a leader, then you only do things to better yourself, not to better the people you've been entrusted to care for. Positions are not there to see what you can get out of them. Positions are there to see what you can do for the people that God entrusted you for this tremendous responsibility. That's what warrior means, or honor means to a warrior. Just to do the right thing, you know, never to leave your comrade on the middle of the street bleeding. You would rather die with him than watch him die out there by himself. That's a code that not too many people understand.
You operate a company called Police Combative Training, is that correct? The Police Combative Training Academy? Is it strictly for police officers, or are people who are of good character, can they also participate in some of your training classes?
Yes, police are good character. Police and for military, special forces, and SWAT guys, and regular police officers. But also, from time to time, I will take a civilian. I want to learn. I want to make sure that I'm prepared. If something should ever go wrong, and I have to protect my family, I'm prepared. The worst thing and I always tell them, the worst thing you can ever do is have somebody break into your house, hurt your child, and hurt your wife, and you sit there and do nothing because you just never prepared yourself for it. So that's the worst thing that can ever
happen. But Hans, maybe you could negotiate with them. Maybe you could try and understand their feelings.
That's more of a koala bear tree-hugging person that may think that may work with somebody who is violent. You know, not everybody's a psychologist. You're not going to go there and try to negotiate with a guy that may have a blade, that already thought about it, broke into your house, and meant to do your harm. The negotiation's out the window. The only thing you have left to do is act for the sake of your family.
Really not time to be fair with another question to which you'll give a detailed and full answer. So let me just ask you this. If folks want more information, you also have a video out about your training and a number of other things available. How do people get more information about your company, Police Combative Training Academy? Where do they go for information about that?
www.policecqbquebec.com.
www.cqb.com.
All right. Or you can do a name search on me, Hans Marrero, and it'll come up the same way.
Okay, and it's M-A-R-R-E-R-O. Again, Hans, M-A-R-R-E-R-O. If you just want to Google that, you'll come up with a nice Kota Bushido-looking figure on the website with a long, I think that's called the katana sword, right?
Correct, sir.
Are you any good with those?
Yes, sir. Pretty good.
You're listening to America Armed and Free.
And welcome back to this segment of Liberty Watch, known as America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the special honor of having with us retired Gunnery Sergeant Hans Marrero. His company is Police Combative Training Academy. Information on it is available at www.policecqb.com. www.policecqb.com. Well, how about that, Sergeant Marrero? Did that have you at attention?
Absolutely. I'm standing out right now.
Cool. I operate a program before this called Swap Shop, and normally we start with a little song about a train and swap shop bargains and all that, but on the program preceding the 4th of July, I start with the only time I change the opening is I start with all four verses of the national anthem. People don't even realize, most people haven't heard all four verses or even know that in some cases that it exists. But I love doing that, and catch the music coming out of the next two breaks, especially the last break. I think you'll find it moving. You rose to be chief of the hand-to-hand combat training in the United States Marine Corps. That's a pretty lofty position. I mean, you're training Marines how to fight for the country and also special forces. How did that come about?
I think it was 91 or 92. It was 93. It's been a while back. But Marine Corps asked me to take over the Coast Combat System in Parris Island. The true head of the system was Grandmaster Ron Dambito, Master Sergeant Dambito. I was his right-hand man. He was the Sook. Sook means the head of the system, and I was the Sooky guy, which means I was the right hand of him. It was him that really pushed the envelope. I was just there to merely assist him and help him fight the battles that we had to fight sometimes.
What battles, that's an interesting point of view. You say fight the battles, as if you had to battle the core to get them to sell them on the idea of hand-to-hand combat. You know, one might think that since the shores of Tripoli, we might have, like, gotten the idea that hand-to-hand combat was important. Did the core attempt to go away from that, and you guys had to kind of hold their nose to it?
Yeah, they went away from the line system. The line system means linear infighting, neural override engagement, and they went to something else. A map system is called, which is, that's good. I mean, it's awesome, some of the stuff they do. But the stuff that they started going away from was the hitting skills. And basically, what happened was we had two young men had hitting injuries. One of them died, one of them survived. But you don't know that when they're in boot camp what type of neurological problems they have, because none of them guys that go in the military get a CAT scan before they go in. I mean, that's too expensive. So, unfortunately, it happened within a couple of months apart. Out of all the people we were training, I said we probably trained over 50,000, maybe more, 75,000 people within the combat system, probably more. I mean, the whole Marine Corps was doing it. And we had two recruits that had problems. And from there, you know, you get the knee-jerk reaction. They want to run away, stop everything, change everything. And some people forget that doing training, you're going to get some injury. I mean, you try to avoid it. You try to make it as safe as possible. You may get injuries. You may get people to die.
Yeah, here's
I lost 18 people off the coast of Anzio rehearsing for the attack of Libya. You know, we didn't know we were going to Libya at that time, but we were rehearsing for an attack in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning. Helicopter goes into the water. That was training. I never lost anybody in combat, but in training, I lost 18 people. Helicopter crash.
We pray for their souls, sir. It's dangerous. I think the figures I read is that annually about 200 people a year in the military die in training accidents that throughout the entire U.S. military. Is that in your within the lexicon of your knowledge? Does that seem like an accurate number to you?
Marine Corps-wise, I can tell you that very few die a year, to say, but it does happen.
Yeah, war is dangerous. There's a bulletin for you. War is dangerous. To the phones, and Vito has called in with a question for retired gunnery sergeant and chief of the Police Combative Training Academy, Hans Marrero. Vito, your question for Gunnery Sergeant Marrero.
Hello. I have a question regarding a legal issue pertaining to the possession of certain martial arts weapons. In particular, it would be the nunchuck. I know that in the state of California, the implement was a felony to be in possession of that. In Arizona now, do you know what the laws are specifically related to the use of that? Say if I was stopped in the driving in a vehicle with the possession, if an officer asked me if I had any weapons, should I say yes, I do? Would I consider that a weapon? And what are the legal ramifications of possessing that?
I do, but I'd rather defer to Sergeant Marrero if you'd like to answer.
I don't know the ramifications legally or because I'm not a police officer.
May I?
Absolutely, sir.
Thank you. Because I teach this, this is part of the training on the concealed weapons class, I happen to know the answer to this, Vito. It is one of the few things in Arizona that it is illegal to possess unless you're going to or from a martial arts competition. And you can legally possess a machine gun in Arizona as long as you have the $200 tax stamp on it. You may legally openly carry the machine gun as long as it's in a holster or scabbard that's as wholly as or partially visible or carried as luggage or in the trunk of your car. But you can't carry a pair of nunchucks with you legally in Arizona as a defensive weapon. It's a misdemeanor under ARS 13-3102, I believe. Could be 3101. I think it's 3102. But you can look it up under the criminal code. You can Google for it in Arizona revised statutes and look in the criminal code and look down the list of Title 13 and you will find it listed as a prohibited weapon. Any other questions?
Yes, thank you for your answer. What if I was moving and I wasn't going to a martial arts tournament?
Well, if it's packed and stuff, it's unlikely that it would be found. But certainly, if you're asked if you have any weapons, there's one or two answers. One is you can always decline to converse, which will get you searched. And that, of course, is legal. Anything you can reach, a police officer can search without your permission because it might be a danger to him in the peaceful performance of his duty if he stopped you for some lawful and legitimate reason. But if it's packed in a box, I don't think anybody's going to say boo about it.
All right, well, thank you for your answer.
My pleasure. You have a great day. Sergeant Marrero, anything to add to that?
Yeah, and I will tell you that if you're carrying any weapons, out of respect for that warrior that pulls you over, the first thing should come out of your mouth is, officer, I have a weapon in my car. It is a gun or maybe a hunting knife that I was in my back seat or something. You should always tell the officer, if you have something, you should right away, as soon as they stop, say, sir, I have this. It makes them it would put him more at ease. He knows that you have something than for you not to say anything and him find it.
Let me explain why that's important. Because the police officer's attitude is frequently based on your attitude. And as long as you show them that you are not threatening to them, they have no reason to be threatening to you in the performance of their job. That's why what Sergeant Marrero said is important. We're going to go back to the phones. And hi, Frank, you're live on America Armed and Free with former Gunnery Sergeant Hans Marrero. Your question or comment for Sergeant Marrero?
Surprise, Sarge.
Do it that, brother.
I was in and went into 58, and what I was wondering, then we had the pugel stick fighting, which was part of the hand-to-hand. They didn't have helmets or any of that garbage, so when we had the regimental fight down to the finish with it, pugel sticks, you know, last man standing, they had five ambulances right there. Do they, when you were in, I guess you were in a little, came in after I did, did they still do it that way, or did they start putting headgear and all that junk on?
Actually, when I got in there, this is one thing Master Gunnery Sergeant Ron Donvito did, and he put a lot of safety features in it to make so we can get the best training out of it. I mean, we used to, I don't know if they're still doing it that way, but we used to have octagons in the middle of the woods. And when we blew the whistle, a recruit will start, or a private will start from one end to the other, and they will run through this trench line. And they knew that once they met somebody with a different color helmet, they were to engage until they got the killing blow. So I mean, we added a lot of things that caused a lot of physical exertion, like running, to make it as realistic as possible. Some of them will run and do a flying kick in the air and drop the guy right in the chest and then and do the jab right to the throat with the bugle stick, then we stop it right there. You have to do it safe, you know? Here's how we look at it in any training. If you're going to send me your child, which is 17 or 18 years old, for me to train him to be a Marine, to be a warrior, I have to make sure that I do it in the safest possible way without killing realism of training to combat. You have to do it in a safe possible way because you never want to hurt any other warriors there that you have coming in there and volunteering to do this.
Yeah, don't kill the trainee or the realism. Stand by, guys. Frank, if you want to have a follow-up, you can do so after the break.
You're listening to America Armed and Free.
Grenada and Afghanistan and Panama's just cause. Halo jumps and scuba swims were missions for the frogs. Somalia, East Africa, Iraq and Pakistan. Shooting, looting, sneaking, peeking, combat hand to hand. Hoo-yah, we're Navy SEALs. Hoo-yah, fire in the hole. Hoo-yah, we'll never quit. Hoo-yah, we're good to go.
And welcome back to America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the special honor of having with us retired Gunnery Sergeant Hans Marrero, who now runs the Police Combative Training Academy. We have Frank holding on, but I want to mention that that was Tommy Cox, who's a submarine veteran from the era of spying done with submarines. And he's also got an album. He's got some 25 songs on three albums that are excellent, and among them, he honors the SEALs. And I wanted to ask, before Frank finished his follow-up, I'd like to ask Sergeant Marrero, in working with special forces, with training special forces, is there any difference between the way you train special forces and the way you train Marines?
No. There is. In special forces, you do get more money, a bigger budget for weapons, shooting, ammo. The regular Marine gets what he gets. There's difference in how much ammo they shoot and what type of training they get, but the regular warrior mentality is the same.
Let me ask you this, and it's a prejudicial question based on your arm of service, but is there any one special forces group that's any more prepared or any more hardened, any more sharpened at the end of the spear than any other?
I have to tell you that to me, one of the best special forces that I've ever worked with was the SAS, British. And to me, after that, Delta Force. The SEALs are good too, but Delta Force is well-rounded.
Well, after all, our forces are modeled on the model of the Special Air Forces and our SEALs on the Special Boat Squadrons, are they not?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
In fact, we copied our INDOC from Delta, from the SAS.
INDOC? Could you explain the term?
INDOC is how, before you go in there, they want to test you that you have that medal, that special medal, to become a Delta guy or
a snake eater.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Frank, I've hogged the guest. Frank, did you have a follow-up for Sergeant Marrero?
Yeah, Sergeant Marrero. Do you remember the little combat town off the coast, Camp Pendleton?
Camp Pendleton? I've been there one time, yes, sir.
Well, I was in EOD and demonstrations troops, and we ran that town, and we trained SEALs and Seabee. Well, actually, we call them all Seabee. They came in for a week for that training. And just to go along with what you said about guys dying in training, we almost lost one. But, you know, crawling under the barbed wire with the machine gun is just, you know, just about 6 inches above the wire. Actually, it was closer to a foot. We had one guy get up, come out of snake, and come up right through the barbed wire and took three in the shoulder. But he lived. He survived that. But the comment about the ones that did die that I saw most of, I mean, I didn't see personally it happen while I was there. Charles is really into ships, Navy ships especially. They would always go out. You know, we had to do that landing on the nets, and I'm sure you did that, Sarge. You know, going down the nets and back up the nets from the landing craft?
Yes, sir.
Why? Well, we know why, but I guess Charles might wonder why we always did it in the worst weather. 8 foot swells and 5 foot waves.
Okay, take your answer on the air, Frank. I want to move on to a few other questions. Sergeant Marrero, why do you practice for combat in the worst conditions possible?
You train for the very worst case scenario. That's how you should always prepare yourself. That way you prepare for everything that may come your way.
Mm-hmm. The next area I wanted to move into, and this is something that the earlier caller about nunchucks brought to mind, and that is there are many less lethal forms of self-defense than firearm, and one of them is the taser. Now, you're affiliated with the taser company, I believe, but explain what a taser is, how it works, and why you think it may be a good alternative if you don't want to carry a firearm.
Well, the taser is a non-lethal weapon. It uses two wires and two probes connected by wires. The probes move at 180 feet per second to 200 feet per second. When they hit you, you get a charge of 50,000 volts, 26 watts of energy, 18 watts of energy, or the new one that we have actually is the best weapon we have out there, which is the XD. You get, it's 5 watts, but you get 6 pulse technology. And what it does, it overrides your central nervous system within a split of a second. It actually will knock you down faster than 3 or 4 bullets hitting your body. Because I can hit you anywhere, and I'm going to get a behavioral change in the body locker and put the individual on the floor. Police officers use them.
Mm-hmm. They'll really get a charge out of it, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And that's something I tell people, not everybody. If you ask a warrior, are you ready to take a life? And he's always going to tell you, yes, if I have to. But you just don't go out of your way to do that. I can tell you this, that women like the taser a hell of a lot more than anything else out there. Because it's forgiven. If a child picks up and shoots his sister, he'll just have a bad time for a good 5 to 10 seconds, but it's not going to kill him.
You know, I have an analogy to that. My parents had a bluish-green Electrolux vacuum cleaner when I was a child, and I was playing with the plug as I shouldn't have been when my mother wasn't looking, and I got literally the shock of my life. And it convinced me once and for all that electricity was not something to play with. And I'm really glad that that lesson happened to me when I was less than 2, and I remember it quite vividly, very, very vividly. And I'm also glad that that wasn't a lesson I learned with a firearm. Are you talking about a similar experience?
With me?
No, with children, if they goof with a taser.
Absolutely. A lot of people get killed accidentally, and it's children with firearms because the people are not safe. You know, they don't teach their children gun safety or tell them, hey, this can really hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a quick story how I got my boys when they were 4 and 6 to respect weapons. I bought a piece of meat, put it out in the yard. I took out my .45, put 3 rounds, and watched the meat splatter. Then I took out my .410 gauge slug and just shot it, boom, 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 and watched the meat just splatter all over the place. Then I turned around to each of them, and I said, this is what you will do to your brother or your friend if you disrespect this weapon. I have never had any problem with my children. Ever misusing it or grabbing or not checking before they give it to somebody and rechecking it when they get a weapon. That
but,
right there was a picture that they'll never forget.
Not only that, but you might have scared them into being vegetarians. I want to know if you train women in the military, and seeing as how there are a lot of female Marines, and I'm certain that you train female police officers, outside of maybe some modern practical sensibilities as to where you're going to put your hands in the training class, is there any difference in the way you train men and women to fight, taking into account their differences in strengths and weaknesses?
No.
None whatsoever?
None. They fight in my class. One of the last things they do, they have to fight 4 people. And attacks come at them from all angles. And she has to continue to fight them. If she does the technique wrong, I stop and start all over again from the beginning. There's only one way to make it out of there. Either she passes out, which then I pour cold water on her, and as soon as she wakes up, somebody will start choking her right off the bat. So, no, she gets the same training. When it's 2 combat techniques, it's going to work for a 95-pound woman, a 95 or 110-pound woman to a 400-pound man. It doesn't matter, because if the technique is meant to work, it's going to work.
I'm glad to hear you believe in equality of the sexes. Have you been offered positions at different agencies in the U.S.? You know, it seems to me there's some advantages to having an official credential. Or do you strictly prefer to work for yourself?
There's been a few agencies that offer me work.
But you don't want to?
No, at that time I wasn't about to do it. And I promised Rick Smith and Tom Smith and Taser International that I would help them achieve in that company, that because what they're doing is, it's remarkable, and that's what people don't hear. There's a lot of negative media out there, but what they don't hear is how many lives they're saving, how many officers didn't have to kill people. And to me, we were able to change policing all over the world, and to me, that was awesome. Just to save one life meant everything.
That's a really important thing that I want to cover more, and that is that using a taser instead of a firearm, there's a lot of circumstances where a taser would be a heck of a lot more appropriate than a gun would, at least in a law enforcement circumstance, aren't there?
Absolutely. Actually, once Phoenix Police Department went to tasers, they reduced their lethal shooting by 50% in the first, 7 months. That's something to say.
That's phenomenal.
We have police departments who have increased officers from getting hurt by 80%. To stop officers from getting hurt. So that's amazing. That's what the Accords newspapers and don't ever print.
I'm not much for feelings. I don't really care how people feel. I care how they think greatly. I respect that. I don't care how they feel. But occasionally I'll delve into this. How does it make you feel to know that you're actually saving lives?
It is an unbelievable feeling. That is the whole key of a warrior. A warrior was put on to protect those who cannot protect themselves. I can't say it any better than that, even if it causes him his life.
Stand by for a moment. What a great tone to go out on.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
Welcome back to America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the special honor of having with us retired Gunnery Sergeant Hans Marrero. How about it? You standing now?
Yeah, I am. You know what? That song, no matter how many times I hear it, pierces my heart and brings goosebumps all over my body.
Ditto. Especially that version of it. I ran into it last night. I had it, ironically, inside my own computer stored away for, I guess I believe in destiny, Sergeant Marrero. I knew one day I'd need it.
Good. That's what I believe, too.
Yeah. How does a person stay in fighting trim in order to protect themselves?
There's a lot of ways you can do it. You can go to a dojo, do some training 3 times a week. You should go to the gym. You should. If you don't like any of that, get on a bike. Ride bike. I see a lot of people in Arizona just riding bikes everywhere. They're motivating me so bad that I went and got 2 bikes.
What'd you get?
I got a regular road bike and a mountain bike.
I don't know
what kind it is. I know it cost me like $1,200. That's how much I paid for that.
But I got a recumbent from one of my sponsors, Aho Bikes, and I'm just having lots of fun on the road bike with it. And, of course, I have a mountain. I have a SC30. They call it a sport comfort. You sit kind of upright more instead of being in that real low rake angle. It's a lot more comfortable to ride it longer, and which, of course, is, I think, better for what ails me. I don't know about what ails you. You probably don't have an ounce of fat on you, imagine.
Oh, I put some weight. I remember when I got out of the Marine Corps, I was like 4% body fat. Now I'm a little higher. I mean, I still stay in shape, but
yeah, now you're
like when I first got out of there.
4.25, right?
Actually, there is a video on the website that people can download, and I'm fighting a 400-pound man in there, taking a gun, a knife, and all that. That I'm the same way I am now. But there's another one where I was the first human being to be shot with the most powerful taser, which was the M26, the first one that came out, the third-generation taser. And there I was in, I just got out of the Marine Corps. So I was in a lot better shape than I am now.
And what would you see on that video? I mean, I've seen that video where you get shot with the taser, and you look like a pretty tough guy in that video. How long after you get shot with the taser does it incapacitate you?
Actually, as soon as it's done, it's done. But psychologically, if somebody has to connect you with the taser and tells you to stay on the ground, you really have to be on crack, or you just have to be crazy to try to get back, stand back up. And drunks usually do that.
Do you ever have any fantasies about having Osama bin Laden on the other end of that thing?
You know what? My fantasy's always been to be on a plane and have some terrorists attack the plane while I'm there. That's my fantasy.
That would be, as we say, a non-positive event for them. Seeing as how this show, America Armed and Free, is about arms and things that shoot and things that have blades, do you have a favorite blade?
Yes, I have a few of them. I have the Emerson, the knife maker. He's a good friend of mine. He gave me one of his blades. I actually have it in my hand. It's called a Commander, and it's an Emerson blade, and it's a great blade for close quarter battle.
Which one? At the Emerson which?
It's called the Commander.
Ah. I have the CQB. That was my CQB. But Emerson made it to you. That's pretty neat.
That's a gift, yeah. I get guys like that all the time, you know, they make a knife and it's a gift. And I'm so honored by that, you know. The only thing I say to them is I'm not in the military, so I can't see how it would actually work out there. I get them all the time, and I appreciate that from them when they do that. Because I test their weapon there. He never asked me to test. That was a gift he gave me. But some people send me knives and ask me to test them, see how, if it's a good combat CQB knife. And I say yes. I write him a letter saying yes, it is, and no, it's not. No, and this is why it's not. Maybe you should change this.
Back to the phones in Maryland. You're live on America Armed and Free with retired Gunnery Sergeant Hans Marrero of Police Combative Training Academy. Your question for Sergeant Marrero.
Sergeant Marrero, thank you for your service to the country. And my question is, I know a lot of people who are more afraid of the lawyers they're going to have to encounter if they do have to kill the burglar in their house than they are of the actual burglar themselves. So it sounds like a taser is a really good option for them. Can you tell me about how a person buys a taser? Are there different sizes that fit the hand of women more than a bigger one? And
yes.
Charles, if you could tell me about what the law is in Arizona about carrying a taser in your car.
Actually, I'm going to defer to Sergeant Marrero on anything related to taser. He's a far greater expert on it than I am. But go ahead, stand by for a follow-up, and we don't have a lot of time, so hang on if you want, and we'll catch a follow-up. Sergeant Marrero, Maryland's questions?
She's in the state of, what state is she?
She's from Arizona.
Oh, yeah, you can carry a taser without no license. And usually when you buy a taser from the company, they will get an officer, an instructor on a taser, who is the police officer, to go to your house and do a one-hour training with you to show you how to use it and talk to you about the taser.
Marilyn, if you'd like to know where to get one locally, Diamondback Police Supply at 170 South Colb has them, and they have training classes on them as well. I think they have a monthly training class that they sponsor.
And
okay,
the
great.
Best one for her is XC26.
It's X-Ray Charlie 26?
Correct.
Okay, why that one in particular?
Because it's a small one. And that one, she can shoot a burglar, and every time she squeezes the trigger, that's 10 seconds. She can hold him down for 30 seconds, have some coffee, smoke a cigarette, and call the police and not worry about it.
Is that part of the training regimen, two squeezes, a cup of coffee, light the cigarette, and dial 911?
Yeah, dial 911 and just wait for them to get there. If he stands up, give him another 30 seconds.
I love it. Is that called Hans therapy?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's the hands-on method. Marilyn, do you have any follow-ups?
No, I just thank you for your information.
All right, you have a great day.
Thanks
for being our foil for just a moment. Once again, Sergeant Marrero, if people would like more information about your training, about your videos, or anything about you, how can they get more information about you?
They can go to the website, www.policecqb.com, or they can do a web search on Hans, H-A-N-S, Marrero, M-A-R-R-E-R-O, and do a Google search or a Yahoo search. And it'll take them to different places, to the Pacers, Pacer International, to my website, and stuff like that.
I wanted to, there isn't time, I wish I had 2 hours with you. I don't, but you talked to me off the air a little bit about some of the books that motivate you, and I believe that the maintenance of freedom requires the study of great books. There's one that, actually one or two that are your favorites. Can you tell us about them, please?
Yes. The first book when I was reading that caught my attention, I was young, I was 9 years old, and I had to memorize that book, was The Art of War by Sun Tzu. There's 13 chapters on it, and that book was written 2,000 years before Christ. And it is an excellent book, but the one that you want to get is the one by James Cadwell. The author, James Cadwell, is a lot easier reading, and he didn't put his two cents in there. He actually allowed the chapters, the basic strategies of the art of war, to just come through whatever knowledge you have. So it's an awesome book. The next one I would recommend, especially for leaders, is Leadership Secrets by Taylor DeHaan. Great book to read. And other ones out there, after you read those two, there is a book. It's called The Book of Five Rings by Musashi, Miyoto Musashi. He was the greatest samurai in Japan ever, legend in Japan. Great, great reading, but it's very slow reading because you have to really grasp what he's saying. You can't, like, try to run, read the whole book in a couple of days because it will drive you insane.
Sort of the warrior-driven life.
Yeah.
All right. Sergeant Marrero, it's all the time we have. The theme music is already running. It's been a pleasure, an honor, and a privilege to have an hour of your time, sir. Appreciate your service to country.
It has been my honor to be on there, and I'm just delighted to be in your show. And I believe in what you're doing, and you have a great show and a great following. That's great. You're doing something that's changing the world, and not too many people can say that. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
God bless you.
God bless you. I want to encourage each and every one of you to be vigorous, vigilant, vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In liberty, I'm Charles Heller. AM 690 KVOI, Tucson, your blowtorch of freedom.